Ooh, there we go. Good deal. I want to share with you kind of what we're doing lately, and I want to share with you some stuff that the Lord is doing, and then I want to share some verses with you, something that the Lord just really encouraged me with personally this year. We are not at Hickory Cove anymore. I think most of you know that. A year ago, at the end of May, we stepped down from our position as executive director. We thought we were going to stay in the ministry and do some work there, but that ended up not working out the way we had hoped, and that's fine. The Lord knew what he's doing. He's got all things under control and in his hand. And we ended up in search of employment, because being able to pay your bills is a good thing. I found that out when you have money in the bank. It's a whole lot better than when you don't. A friend of mine that I had done some independent consulting for came to me and asked if I wanted to start a business with him called Strong Lead, where we would go into other businesses and do consulting, leadership development, and executive coaching. And I love doing that kind of stuff. I said, yeah, I think that's something that might be good. We prayed about it. We talked about it. Ruth and I did for a while. And we started down that road, and we've been doing that. Well, we started that for-profit business called Strong Lead, and what we quickly found out was there's a lot of nonprofits that need executive leadership, coaching and teaching and development and training, but there's not a lot of people that are willing to do that because it costs money to do that. So we kind of devised this plan where we started a non-for-profit called Catawba Valley Leadership Foundation. I'll talk about that in just a second. And our for-profit customers, along with some other people that donate to it, they donate money to the non-for-profit Catawba Valley Leadership Foundation, and then we go and help the nonprofits in our area with the things that they're doing. Now, we hold a three-hour class once a month for 22 people that represent 12 different nonprofits in our area, and all of those 12 nonprofits, 11 are faith-based nonprofits. The 12th is not a faith-based nonprofit, but it's run by all believers. So it has a very strong Christian influence to it, and it involves crisis counseling with families and young women in crisis. We started that process, and the Lord started opening some crazy doors that I want to tell you about. And just to kind of let you know, and you guys know this, but I want to remind you of this. You are never not involved in the ministry of God unless you choose to not be involved in the ministry of God. If you think you need to go somewhere else to do what God's calling you to do, you are sadly mistaken. The place you need to be busy about God's work is right around you, and I'll talk to you about that in just a moment. So we started helping these nonprofits. The first of them was a place called Safe Harbor, and it was a ministry to women who were in addiction and crisis and homelessness. And we went in, and we didn't work with the women, but we worked with the leadership to help restructure that ministry. And what we saw happen was all of these other needs started coming up, and we started doing leadership development and executive coaching with the people who were running this ministry. Very accomplished people, good people, great ministry in the community. They have a non-for-profit business that's, they call it Resource, but they sell things to help offset the cost of the nonprofit. A lot of places do that with things like thrift stores. They sell and reuse furniture, all kind of stuff. It's crazy. But they have this store that they do that with. Well, the store was really underperforming. So I'm coaching the person who's leading this store, and their sales numbers are not performing, and more importantly, their margin's not where it needs to be. Well, I'm a geek about that kind of stuff. I am a business nut when it comes to that thing. Well, they wanted them to make $50,000 profit in 1 year to help go to the offset the cost of the ministry. Well, that year before, they made $9,000. So she's like, what am I going to do? They want me to make this, and there's no way I can do this. And I said, oh, no, we can do this. So started working with her, got involved in there. And again, I love this kind of stuff. At the six-month point, they were up $30,000. The end of the year is close to $70,000. Right? So 1 year flipping, 1 year, year over year, they went from a plus $9,000 to a plus $70,000, because they had people come in who understood business, who understood profit margin, who understood overhead and process, and helped them rearrange. So now this ministry can minister to more women who are in homelessness, more women who are in addiction, more women who are in abusive situations. And it's a phenomenal program. They have a crisis program they deal with right away. They have a day program where women can come at any time with their kids. They have apartments that women, once they complete their 9-month program, go into these apartments and live. They go and they find jobs for them and help them reacclimate into culture. Well, we help them do that, so now they can be that much more efficient in the work that they're doing. We didn't help any of those women ourselves, which I love doing the one-on-one ministry, and I still get to do a lot of that, but because we went in and worked with them, that ministry was able to effectively meet a whole lot more needs because we helped them over an administrative side, right? I couldn't have gone and fundraised that much money for them and kept it sustainable, but we can help them realign their business, and their business actually is going to do even more than that now because they moved to another location. So this kind of coaching is what we started doing, and it was really funny how it started going really quick. Well, one of the things that one of my partners started was this monthly or a quarterly meeting with other Christian business leaders and men of influence in the community called Legacy Leaders. And we would meet once a quarter, sit down, and we would pray. These are all Christian guys that own businesses, work in the city, work in the school systems, and they would talk about the needs in the community and how can we help this community be a godlier community. And the city of Hickory has a seal, and the first emblem on the seal is a cross, because way back when they said, we want to be a Christian community. So we said, well, how can we help make our community a Christian community? We can't change the politics. We can't go around and proselytize to everybody. So how can we do this? Well, one of the men who met there was a school superintendent. And he said, here's what I would like to do. I wish somebody could come into our schools and help do what you guys do with our students. Let's talk about that. So now what's happened is he invited us, we presented a program to him and to the board, the school board, and they loved it. So now what happened is we started going into one school twice a day during the class time. They provide a class for us, 20 students. We go in there and we teach them leadership development for post-high school life. You got to bring something into the marketplace. School debt will kill you if you do that wrong. Help them all make all these decisions, right? It took off in that one school and they loved it. 1 year later, we're in 4 schools working with probably over 100 students because we don't do the whole school. We just don't have the bandwidth to do that. One of the schools, the principal came to us and said, I would like you to do that with our staff, myself and the 3 assistant principals, and I'd like you to do that with every teacher in the school. Well, how are you going to make time for that? Well, every month the teachers get one day that's an in-school study day for them to help prepare and do things. She said, I'm going to give you one class time during that day. So one Monday a month, we meet with 15 teachers, hour and a half each time, 4 times a day. So 60 of those teachers, all of the teachers, get leadership development and executive coaching poured into them to help them do a better job in the community. Now here's where it gets really goofy, right? And we also do this with the principal and with her 3 assistant principals in this one school. We haven't even started with the students yet. We'll start with them in January. What we have found out, and again, don't go tell everybody in Hickory this, okay? What we have found out is there are broken people who need Jesus all over the place. And when you choose to enter their world and love them where they're at, with their baggage, all of the stuff going on, can't change them, not here to fix everything, I just want to value you and show you who Jesus is, all of a sudden we can't keep up with the people who are coming to us and asking us about Jesus. I'll give you a couple of stories. One of the people that we work with is a very influential woman in her role. I have to be careful with some of this. And she's married to another woman. And we've developed this relationship, and she comes to me a little while ago really concerned. And she said, my wife, because they're legally married, my wife is really sick. Can you pray for her? Absolutely, I can pray for her. So all of a sudden now this friendship has started because she sees someone who values her, even though she knows we see things differently. She sees someone who values her in her mess, in her life, where she's at. And now all of a sudden she comes with other questions and conversation because she's safe, because she knows I'm not out to beat her down and get her on the straight and narrow, but I want to love her and point her to Jesus. There's another on the for-profit side of our business. I go in and I'll walk with people who are plant managers. Again, I love the production process. I love going in and finding where you can make money and save processes and streamline things. And the majority of that is done actually through human-human interaction, not process change. But how do you lead people better? How do you communicate better? Well, there's a young man who, when I went into this factory to start working with them, he was like the third tier down leader. He was a leader over his area. And I kept watching this guy. I was there for about 3 months, and the leader who was there was a great guy, really amazing Christian guy, but he was in the wrong seat on the bus. And I went to the owner who had hired me to do this, and I said, I got something kind of radical I want you to think about. This guy, his name's Dave. Dave's got what it takes to run that plant. The guy that you have in place doesn't, though. If we can have him be the number two and move Dave into this plant manager role, I think you got a winning team. Nobody liked that idea. The other manager that oversaw those guys thought it was stupid. The other directors in the company thought it was ridiculous. $70 million company, they're not going to turn a factory over to this 36-year-old guy who's a goofball. Talked to the owner. He finally said, all right, we're going to give this 6 months and do that. After three months, and again, there's a more story to the numbers here, but this factory was last by a long shot in its employee efficiency, in its employee turnover, in its product yield, in its bottom line margin. After 3 months, it went from being dead last by a long shot to being even with the number one plant. 3 months later, it's lap in the field. We didn't change one process. We didn't change one operational procedure. All we did was go in and coach people to lead better, what to pay attention to, and how to do that. So I walk in one day, and the guy who got moved down to the second position, great guy, he shoots me a text, says, are you coming into the shop today? And I said, well, I wasn't planning on it. He said, well, that's okay. I says, but I can. No, don't worry about it. I said, I'll be there at 1. Go in at 1 o'clock, walk in on the plant floor, I find him, and he just does one of these deals. And he starts walking to his office. So he's on that side of the plant, I'm on this side of the plant. We meet at his office. We walk in the door, don't even get in the door and sit down. And he said, my daughter's trying to kill herself, 13 years old. He didn't say my production yield's not what it's supposed to be. He didn't say the people aren't paying attention to me. He didn't call the chaplain. He didn't call his pastor of his church. For whatever reason, he called the consultant. So to sit with him and pray with him and talk with him about how he can help his daughter and what he needs to pay attention to, and let me just pause there for a minute. In your life, the Lord is going to do things. You're going to turn around one day and wonder, how the heck did this all happen? We were talking about that a little bit this morning, weren't we, Paul? You look back and it's like, what? For some reason, I got suicide prevention counseling and training. For some reason, I learned how to do process and development in business. For some reason, I geek out over numbers and P&Ls and balance sheets and sales and economies, and I love to counsel and deal with people. And all of a sudden, the Lord converges all of this, and I'm sitting in this guy's office, invited by him, praying with him as to how he can help his daughter. Two days later, Chuck, are you coming into the office today? I wasn't planning on it. It wasn't Mark, the guy who was second. It was David, the young guy who's taken over. I wasn't planning on it. Well, that's okay. I'll be there. I think that time it was 2. I'll come in. Walk in, see him. You can tell he's been crying. He said, come back and talk with me. Walk back to his office. He and his wife split up. Little child. She has 2 kids from a previous marriage. They're only married 2 years. Free fall, falling apart. You got to help me. So sit down with him. Help him begin this long process of healing his marriage, walking through that world with him. Today, he and his wife are together, doing great. And here's what's really crazy. About a month forward from there, I meet with all these plant managers, right? I'm meeting with these plant managers. And the first thing on their all their job descriptions, the owner is a believer. The first thing on all their job descriptions is you have to display and forward the company's vision and mission. Well, if you go back and look at the company's vision and mission, he's a Christian guy, owns his company. He talks a lot about representing God to your employees and to the customers and to the staff that they work with. So I ask these plant managers in this meeting, how can you fulfill your job description if you don't understand that first part of your job description? What's the company's vision and mission? So they start talking about representing God, and this guy David leans forward, and again he's crying. He says, I have been asking myself that for 2 weeks now. How do I do that when I don't know who this God is? His exact words, when I don't know who this God is. One of the other plant managers leans forward and starts sharing the gospel with him. I'm not saying anything. Another plant manager puts his arm on his shoulder and says basically that the Lord is here for you, and he starts sharing the Lord with him. So in our plant managers meeting, where we're talking about process and leadership and how we're going to, God orchestrates this all of a sudden. So these guys are sharing the Lord with David. The very next day, I get another one of those texts. Are you coming in today? Yes, I'm coming in today. Good. Come see me. I'm thinking he's going to get after me because he's embarrassed because he cried and was emotional in front of all these people. Go back to his office, walk in, don't even get the door all the way shut. And his exact words, he looked at me and he pointed and he said, how do I do this God thing? Not how do I lead my people better, not how can I get promoted in my job, not how can I make more money. How can I do this God thing? His exact words. So to sit down with him and share Jesus with him in his work environment, in his office, at his request. When does that happen? That's ridiculous. Right? But I'm here to tell you God is at work. Dave now isn't just a client. He's my brother in the Lord because he came to the Lord. Right? What I want to share with you guys today is if you grasp the essential thing that Jesus calls us to do, I promise you, you won't be able to keep up with opportunities to share Jesus with people. And you know what that central thing is? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And they didn't ask for the second one, but Jesus made sure they got that one. And that's the big deal. And, oh, by the way, you need to go love your neighbor the way you love yourself. And here's my observation, and I'm the king of this, so don't take this as me throwing you under the bus, even though I'm going to throw you under the bus. I am more concerned about making you like me than introducing you to Jesus. I'm more concerned with conforming you to a subculture than I am with introducing you to the God who loves you and gave himself for you. I'm more concerned with washing you up and having you not stink quite so bad and putting pretty clothes on you and having you ascribe to certain tasks than I am with you encountering deity. And I want to share with you today, I want to plead with you today, point people to Jesus, not to you and I. Point people to a God who loves them and gave himself for us. Point people to a God that will meet you right where you are in all your crap and headache and mess and dirtiness and nastiness and insecurities and insufficiencies and everything that you are. There is nothing that will stand between God embracing you right where you're at. You cannot be dirty enough to push him away from you. He will hug you with all of the pig crap all over you and pull you out of that mess and bring you home, because that's the God that he is. We come to people, and I got time for you, but you gotta, and you need to. And our desire is not to truly love on them. Now, I want to be real careful when I say this, because it's easy to say that people don't come to Jesus because we don't love them enough, and that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if you make yourself vulnerable to be in relationships with other people and not be ashamed to let them know that you love a God who loves them, not beat them over the head, not try and proselytize them at every turn, but love them in the power that God has loved you with, you will not be able to keep up with the opportunities to show Jesus to other people. I am not an evangelist. That's not my gifting. I'm a discipler. I'm a teacher. I'm a leader in other areas. I am not an evangelist. Some people just have that gift. They fall off the subway and 75 people get saved, right? Just not the way I'm wired. But what I have found out is when you genuinely, genuinely value people, it's amazing how much they lean in. I'll tell you real quick one more story. There's a guy, his name is Walt. Walt's 42. In fact, he just turned 43 last Tuesday. Year-old guy, he's about this big, weighs about 105 pounds. He has lived in drug abuse and all kind of nasty stuff he's got. He's got one, like a third of one tooth right here and another tooth kind of right here, and then everything else is just kind of rotted in his mouth. It's nasty. And he works for a company that we work with. And I've talked to him. Well, one day he was really depressed and he was thinking about killing himself. And he called the HR department, and he went in there and he told them, "I'm really struggling." And they asked if they could bring someone for him to talk to. Again, he didn't call his pastor. He didn't call the chaplain. He didn't call any of his friends. He called my partner, who is an amazing, godly man. Bruce goes over there, and in the HR department with two of the other executives around, ends up praying with this guy, Walt, to receive the Lord. Now, Walt's life has changed, and he's living it. It's a dramatic change. The other day, he lives out in the country. He's walking on a country road at about 6 o'clock in the morning before he goes to work, and he gets hit by a car, and they leave him on the side of the road. He's got broken ribs, torn up knee, horrible concussion. He finally got home. He had to limp and crawl home literally about a mile and a half. He gets home and he shoots me this crazy text. I can't understand the words in it. And I call him and he's talking all gibberish. And I go over to, he lives in a pop-up trailer on the back of some guy's property. And I go over to his trailer and I beat on his door, and he can't even get to the door to unlock the trailer, and the door is locked, and literally takes him about 15 minutes to drag himself down the lock. Go in there and sit down with him. He's bleeding all over the place. Finally let him take him to the doctor. He said to me this week, he said, "Chuck, I don't have any family left. I don't have anybody in this world that I can count on. You don't know how much it means that you and Bruce will take me to the doctor. I took him to the dentist to get this half of all of his teeth, what's left of them, taken out. He'll go next week to get the other ones done. I don't know what I'd do if I didn't have somebody like that in my life." A bajillion years into eternity, there's going to be a Walt in heaven, perfect, because a guy like Bruce took time to go share Jesus with him. I want to encourage you to use the gift that's God given you to find somebody else and love them and let them be valued. To let them know that when God looks at them, he sees someone amazingly important to him. I tell the kids in the schools that the one that made you doesn't make mistakes. I get to tell them this in our public school system. By the way, if you think schools are rotting and terrible, I don't know how it's happening, but and I've prayed with them. I've prayed with every superintendent in their office in the three school districts around us, with all of the principals of all of the teachers around. I don't know how it's happening, but it's happening, right? Don't tell anybody, please. I tell all of the kids at the end of each class, the one that made you doesn't make mistakes. You're here on purpose for a purpose. You are uniquely gifted and talented and called by the one who made you and doesn't make mistakes to go and live exactly who you're supposed to be in this world. And we tell them, we want you to be successful, and here's how we define success: by discovering who you're made to be and living it to your fullest. If you do that, you're successful. Not how much money you make, not what kind of job you have, not how much influence you do, not what kind of toys you buy, but if you discover who you're meant to be and you live that to your fullest, you're going to be successful. You're being what God has designed you to be. So it's funny, I'm going to share with you a verse real quick, a couple verses real quick, but when God took us out of the camp world at Hickory Cove, it's left some scars, I'm not going to lie to you. And again, my partner Bruce, he said, you know, sometimes God blows things up behind you so bad so that there's no way you can go back, because he wants us to move forward, right? When that all transpired, I was really bummed. I felt cheated and hurt and It just really, really stung. And all of a sudden, the Lord started to open these doors for me, and I realized, and Ruth has said this to me, you're doing what God made you to do. And I thought, isn't that stupid? Here I'm telling these kids, go and discover what you're made to be and do that to your fullest and you'll be successful. And here I'm moping around thinking I'm not doing what I should be doing. I don't know who you are or what God has made you to be, but you do, and you know how to discover that by leaning into the Lord and finding out who He is. The beginning of January, the Lord gave me a verse. I was telling Sam this. It's funny. He said it was the same verse the Lord gave him at one period in his life. I had spent some time with the Lord last year, and again, I was really frustrated. My heart was hurting because there was good things going on, but there was also some things that were really difficult to swallow happening. And the Lord brought this verse to me. I will restore to you the years the locusts have eaten. Now, when we went to Hickory Cove, we had lost our business, lost our house, lost retirement, everything. We went down there, but we were at zero at least. I had $300 in a used minivan, but at least I had that. When we left, we had about $50,000 of medical debt left over from a heart attack and probably a second heart attack and a surgery, two surgeries, and all of this before the healthcare stuff had changed. And we're trying to navigate this. And you can't make that up on a camp executive director salary. In that year, we wrote the last check to pay off the last amount of that in October. Now, that's not the only thing the Lord has restored to the locusts of Eden. But God has stepped in and done some crazy things. And I want to plead with you to lean in and find out how much He loves you, how much He wants to commune with you. The verse that you read this morning about communion, He fervently desired to take that with them. He wasn't moaning and groaning that He was going to get crucified in a little while. He wanted to be with them. He wanted to wash their feet. Jesus wants to be with you. The greatest part of His day is hanging out with you. He loves you to that degree. Here's what the Lord reminded me of just about a month ago. I was reading these verses again. I'm going to read them. They're in Joel chapter 2, and I have the NIV. It says in verse 25 of Joel 2, I will repay you for the years the locusts have eaten, the great locust and the young locust, the other locust and the locust swarm. And then here's the verse that really bothered me. Have you ever had those times when you're mad at the Lord? Don't lie and say no. You don't even have to acknowledge yes, but we all know it, right? And this one, I wasn't real fired up with it. My great army that I sent among you. I love the fact that He says, I'm going to restore the years the locusts have eaten. But then I had to scratch my head and say, you know what? He's the one that sent the locust. And why does He send the locust into our life? To take away and eat up all the things that keep us from the Lord. These wonderful gifts that God gives us, and we begin to idolize them more than the one who gives us the gifts. These beautiful blessings that the Lord puts in our life, privilege, wealth, opportunity, entertainment, all of these wonderful things that we get to use, and we begin to love those things so much that God takes a second backseat to them. And oh, by the way, if He doesn't give us enough of it, we're mad at Him for that. So He sends the locusts. And the locusts come in and they disrupt our life. And they change our reality. And then when we get our eyes where they need to be, and all of a sudden we see how much we need the Lord, He says, I'm going to repay back all of that stuff that I've taken. But when we hold it the second time, at least in my case, it's a whole lot different perspective. What I want to encourage you guys with is, and this has been on my heart to say to you, and this is, I don't know why, this is just the way God does His goofiness, right? I wanted to come up here and say this to you. You have an opportunity to influence people for Jesus in incredible ways. You have people that are really old, like Mark Tissot, right? Ancient, all the way down to some of you younger guys. One of the other things I tell the kids all the time, and I've been telling them this since I was doing camp stuff, is if you can breathe, it's your day. You have a purpose. If you're alive, there's a God that designed you with great intention. This is your time and your day to be the person God has called you to be. I want you to be successful. I want you to discover what God has made you to be and live that to its fullest. Here's the funny thing about it. In the grand scheme of things, 50, 20 years from now, 100 years from now, they're going to be who? Chuck who? And that's all good. Because there'll be other people then if the Lord wants his work to continue. But for all of eternity, God in the heavens will remember the work that we do for him. It's interesting, it says when judgment is going to happen, we're not going to be judged and condemned. Two things will be judged. Our decision for Christ. Were we true followers of Jesus? Did we give our heart to him? Are we a believer, right? And the other thing is what were our works? The works will be judged. The ones that were true are wood, hay, and stubble. They burn up. Or the ones that are not true are wood, hay, and stubble. They burn up. The ones that are true are treasures to the Lord. This silly non-for-profit that we do, Catawba Valley Leadership Foundation, is there to serve a purpose. We don't tell people that we're here to bring Jesus into the school system. We don't tell people that we're here to bring Jesus into the workplace or into the community, the city government. We have access into all of these places now in a very short time. But we go in and we do that with what God's called us to do, help develop leaders. And what we found out is we can't keep up with the opportunities to share Jesus with people. People that come to us and say, what can I do about that? But the instigating factor is that we love them. You can't scroll down through that, but if you go to that website, it's Catawba Leadership, you'll find we do what's called a leadership roundtable. We just gather a bunch of business owners in the community, buy them lunch, and ask them what they're experiencing in their worlds and how can we help it with that. We're not charging them anything, we're just doing that. We have a legacy leaders meeting, again, which are these mature, godly Christian leaders. We call them the community elders. They have chosen to take on that mantle of being responsible for their community. Get together with them. Ask them, how can we bring Jesus into our community? How can we love on our community? We do this work in the nonprofit world. And what I've found out, I've told this to a lot of people, in the last year and a half, I've got to tell more people who don't know Jesus about Jesus than I have at any other time in my life, including times at camp where you're literally preaching to hundreds of kids at a time. I've got to tell more people who don't know Jesus about Jesus than any other time in my life, in their worlds and in their work environments. God is just doing an amazing, amazing, amazing thing. And here's the cool part of it. It's accessible to you too. It doesn't need to be a big grandiose story that they're going to make a movie out of. It needs to be you recognizing who God's called you to be. And you living that out, being Jesus to somebody else, loving that next person that's hard to love, being kind to that person who just needs kindness. It's amazing what happens. It's amazing what happens. I hope you hear my heart this morning. I want to continue to say this to you guys. You have been so sweet to Ruth and I for lots and lots of years. And that's a big deal to me. I don't take that lightly. We have had many people shoo us to the side because we weren't the kind of Christian they wanted us to be. But you guys have been very, very generous and loving and caring to us. And that goes a long way. And I want you to know the investment that you've made in us continues for kingdom work in a great, great way. And I'm not going around telling this to tons of people, but because you guys have supported us and been so kind to us, I want you to hear me say it's a big freaking deal. Lots of people are hearing about the Lord in places that we would never thought we'd have an opportunity to. And if we were in the middle of some foreign country against the gospel, we'd be writing books and making movies about some of these things that are going on. But it's happening in our backyard, and it's happening because you guys have continued to pray for, love on, and support people who are looking to propagate this incredible message. There's a God who loves you enough to give himself for you. So I'll shut up now because I'm way over time. But you guys mean a lot to us. I just want you to know that I really, really appreciate it. Let me pray for you. Father, thank you for just our friends and family here at Grace and Truth. They have used so many of the resources you've given them, way beyond dollars. So many of the resources you've given them to proclaim you. Lord, would you bless them greatly? I pray that you would continue to work in the hearts of these young men and women over here to my left. Lord, may they love you and know you more than anything. For the young families who are here, Father, especially the dads, stir up their hearts to love you and discover you and lead for you. There isn't a toy, a thing, an experience in this world that's as great as knowing you. Father, do a great work here. Continue to bless them. Continue to use them to advance your kingdom, to show people your love in this world. Thanks again that we can be up here, and we lift them up to you in your name, Lord Jesus. Amen. Thanks again for having us, guys. We look forward to running into you again soon.